If your brain is dead, not operating, but your mind is operating, that clearly indicates that the mind is not the brain. But what is it? I don't know. He doesn't know. You can't answer that question right now. Maybe someday we'll be able to answer it.
What the mind actually is, if it's not just being like produced by the brain, if the brain is a sort of controlling factor on the mind, what is the mind? Like, what do you think is going on there?
Well, it's a question that nobody has solved, and I doubt anybody can ever solve, because it's our consciousness. We have no distance from it. And even in physics, they've understood that when you look at something, study something, your mind is actually altering what you study. Right? You're aware of that, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
How can you study your own mind? Because as you study your own mind and consciousness, you're altering it, right? So you can never see it for exactly what it is. But the thing is, when I'm reading right now a very interesting book on near-death experiences, it's one of it's like the fifth book I've read, called After. It's by a psychiatrist, psychologist, a doctor, psychologist. Anyway, it's a fascinating book, and he's going into exactly what you're talking about. And so in these near-death experiences, people are literally brain dead. They're literally declared dead, and yet their mind is still going, okay? And they come back from it, and they describe these experiences. Now, you might poo-poo that and say, oh, that's just irrationality. But no, science have demonstrated that they were literally declared dead. Their breathing had stopped. Their heart had stopped. And he's collected thousands of these stories. So it's not like just one person hallucinating it, and they have common themes. So if your brain is dead, not operating, but your mind is operating, that clearly indicates that the mind is not the brain, right? But what is it? I don't know. He doesn't know. You can't answer that question right now. Maybe someday we'll be able to answer it. But your mind is not your brain. And one thing, you know, about this kind of filtering mechanism that fascinated me, a lot of my book has to do with early humans, because I believe they were much closer to a lot of these experiences, right? And I have a chapter on paganism, and particularly ancient Greek religion, because it's something that I've studied very deeply, but also other religions. And in the pagan world, they were much closer to human consciousness and how weird it is to be a conscious animal, to be hearing voices in your head, to be hearing yourself telling you things. We take that for granted, but for them, I don't know if you've ever read Julian Jayne's book about the bicameral mind.
No.
He thought that people thought those were hallucinations, hearing their own thoughts, right? And then when they finally made the connection that those weren't hallucinations, then Western civilization occurred, for the good and for the bad. But so they understood that something weird is going on with consciousness, and they were very aware of that filtering mechanism going on. And so a lot of ancient religion involved creating rituals that completely messed you up, right? That were like a psychedelic experience. They would, in initiation rituals, they would literally torture a young man, usually it was men, boys, and put them close to death, right? In very, very harsh circumstances, and then pull them out. And they were like reborn, and they had that utterly sublime experience. They completely opened up, and all those filtering mechanisms dropped out. And so, and of course, the use of drugs in the ancient world has now been demonstrated to be extremely widespread. They were using opium. They were using the version of LSD from rye seeds. You know, they had hashish. They had all sorts of drugs they were using. Anyway, so that filtering mechanism, you walk around, you're not aware of it. You're not aware of it at all. And this one, in the book Alive, there was this one woman who had a near-death experience. She had the most fascinating metaphor. She said, in your daily life, it's like you're inside of a giant warehouse, but all you have is a flashlight, or you call it a torch. And you able to look at one thing at a time, right? And what you see, oh, that's a box there, that's something there. And you're only able to see what your torch will illuminate. Well, when she had her near-death experience, it was like the whole warehouse was lit up. And she was seeing colors that people don't normally see. She was feeling emotions that you normally don't feel. The whole warehouse, everything inside of it was suddenly illuminated, and she could see reality for what it is, which we don't observe. I'm sorry, I could go on and on about this, Alex. I've collected so much material. You have to shut me up at some point.
No, I hope that you do, because I'm just as interested in this as you are, I think, but not to the extent that I've actually done all of the research that you have. And so it's a great opportunity to dive into some of that. I mean, a few things you said jump out at me. I mean, one thing is to say, if the research shows that, at least with psychedelics, as the mind opens, the brain activity goes down, the next obvious question is, well, what happens when that brain activity goes down to zero? You know, if the mental activity is going up and up, if the mind is opening and opening and opening, you know, I'll sort of leave that question open in the air. And I think it's right to remain agnostic, but to say the mind is not the brain is quite a radical position to take in what is otherwise quite a materialistic culture. I mean, the scientific age that we live in has this optimism about the ability to explain everything in terms of atoms that bump into each other. Are you suspicious of that? And if so, has that been a result of recent research, or has that been something you've sort of always been thinking about?
Well, I have a side of me that's very into the materialistic way of looking at things. Mm-hmm. But as you get older, you know, things shift a little bit. But I don't know if this is related to your question, but one thing that's been on my mind is the idea of the invisible. So we're so, as an animal, we're so caught up in what we can see, right? And that's our whole world, that's our whole reality. But actually, the human experience involves a lot of what is completely invisible. Okay, are you familiar with the French writer Paul Valéry?
I don't think so. Maybe.
What did he write?
Fantastic writer. He wrote poetry, but he also wrote these incredible essays. He wrote one novel that's really good, but his essays are what excite me. His poetry is really good as well. He lived in like the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he had a concept called the French word esprit, which, you know, we would just translate as spirit, but he takes it to something much bigger. And he says that this, you could almost like abstract it from an individual and say that the human world is operating under this esprit. I mean, Hegel called it Geist, so it's similar, I suppose, in some ways to the Hegelian concept. But, and so it's like all of the, if you took all of the human experience of like symbols, so much of our experience involves symbols and analogies. Words are symbolic, okay? None of that is actually real or physical. It's simply abstract concepts in our mind we've invented. So you look at a flag, and it has all of these emotions and things attached to it. It's just a stupid piece of fabric, right? There's nothing to it. We add all of these elements to our world, this invisible thing. Ideas, can you reduce an idea to something material? Can you like try and go into the brain and see the actual neurons that are being connected that come up with an idea? No, you never will be able to do that. It's an invisible process, right? And so we're surrounded by things that we can't see. And I have the analogy in my book of, you look at the city around you and you just see the buildings, the cars, the people, the technology. But if you had a different sense, you could see the invisible, you could see all of the ideas and the struggles and the mental world that went into creating all of this thing, all of the stuff that's around us. So we're enveloped in things. Communication between humans is not something, when I tell you something that moves you, that hits you in the gut, and we have this kind of connection, like some people who have fallen in love have. You can't reduce that to a material thing. The communication between people, what is that? So much of our experience cannot be reduced. It simply cannot be reduced. But we live in a very reductive times where everything has to be reduced to a smaller and smaller and smaller thing. And to the point where if everything becomes an algorithm, it's not that reality is an algorithm, it's that we've transformed our world into something small and algorithmic.